This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault, Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, and Mike Herzing.
Well, hey guys, this is great. It's been a great deal. Welcome to Let's Talk Wheels. It's been a great year, and so far at least. And of course, we're only a few days into it, so that's pretty exciting. Jeremy Berenbaum, classic.com. By the way, that's CLASIQ. Hey man, how was your weekend?
It was great. You know, just shaking off all that New Year laziness I've been having, you know, relaxing between the holidays and New Year's. Now it's time to get back to work.
A lot of football, a lot of fun, a lot of car stuff. I was just talked to Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau. He's at the CES this week. All that automotive stuff there. But you know what? There was something that you and I were talking about the other day. And, you know, every year we have a lot of change going on in the automotive industry, you know, and eventually these things are all going to be classics. Some of them will be classics and some of them won't. You know, you're right. There's a lot of cars that are going to leave us, that left us in 2019, that won't be around for 2020. They're not being renewed, kind of like some of the series that aren't being renewed on television. And there's a lot of cool stuff that I was kind of, in a way, surprised. What about, you saw the list. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say the two bummers that, you know, right off the top of the bat is the Volkswagen Bug and the Audi TT. Both those cars to me seem like such an awesome car. They've been around for almost, you know, my entire driving life. So it's sad to see those two cars go.
Yeah, the Audi TT is the first one. We talked about that one. And that's, you know, the TT, the A3, and the Cabriolet. So that's going to change. BMW is losing the 3 Series GT, the Gran Turismo, and the 6 Series Gran Turismo. I don't know that that's going to be a big blow to anybody's, you know, life here.
That's, I don't think cool. So either. I like those cars, but, you know, now more people are going to that station wagon type of look, so I understand why BMW might be cutting these out.
Yeah, then we've got Buick. It's actually getting away from sedans, period, which, if you'd go back 10 years ago and you say, or even 5 years ago, and say Buick's not going to have any sedans, I'd say you're crazy, because Buick is a car company. But I guess they're not. They're going to be an SUV company because they're getting ready with the Cascada and the LaCrosse. They're getting ready those. And the Cascada was that really hot-looking convertible. And I know customers that own these things, and they love them. Actually, everybody loves a Buick nowadays. I mean, they're so popular.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised by this as well. My uncle has the same LaCrosse Buick, and I'm surprised to see it go.
You know, it really is a nice vehicle. Now, you got Cadillac. They're getting ready to axe, really, the CTS, ATS were replaced by the CT5 and CT4, so that's not a big deal. But there's just a lot of things that are, the CT6 is one of them. But a lot of these Cadillacs are just, sometimes I'll pick up at the airport on an automotive event, and they'll be in one of the fancy Cadillacs, CT6, things like that. And they're nice vehicles. They really are. And I think I'm going to miss some of these. Hopefully they'll replace them.
I think they're beautiful vehicles. Sometimes I get a little bit confused looking at which one's which. They all look very similar size and design-wise.
All right. Now, Chevrolet, we're going to lose the Cruze, the Volt, the Impala, and the Malibu Hybrid. And I'm not really too bummed about it. I like the Volt in a way. I really did, although it didn't have the range I wanted, but I liked the idea. You know, the Impala, the only thing about the Impala is I used to see him in my rearview mirror because I was getting it pulled over by a cops. But I'm not going to miss a lot of these. How about you?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that the Volt came in and kind of did what it was supposed to do and really opened people up to GM and electric vehicles. And right. So I think it brought a lot of people in there. They still have the Bolt around. But, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be too sad to see any of these go.
Yeah, but now Malibu, I think they're going to get rid of the hybrid, but I think the regular Malibu is going to still be there. Now, when we get into Fiat, the Fiat 500, the hatchback, the convertible, and the electric E version, which they sold only in California, they're all leaving, okay? And they're going to come out with one of them. They're also going to lose the Abarth, which is one of our favorites because that was the fast one. I don't know what they're going to replace with. They've got a version of the 500 coming in, but the Fiat 500 is just too little.
Yeah, you know what? I saw it as it had a cool place, but definitely we're seeing cars are getting bigger, and you're even seeing, you know, Fiat's keeping, I think, the X and the L, the two bigger versions of the 500, and they're just losing that small one. I'm a Mini Cooper guy. I see a huge benefit in being able to zip around in traffic and park in a small car, but it seems like, at least in the States, we're really losing that small car sector.
Well, you know, you're right. If it was everybody had a small car, it wouldn't be so bad. But the problem with when you have these Suburbans and Expeditions and Excursions and all those kind of things, and then they have a wreck with a small car, the small car always loses.
Of course.
You know, now we've got Ford. They've got the Flex, the Fiesta, and the Taurus. Taurus was a neat car. I'm really surprised that they didn't just keep that. The Flex, it was a nice SUV, CUV. But it never really found its place. I had a sister-in-law that had a Flex, and she absolutely loved it. Then she ended up going to a van. But, I mean, they were great cars. And I don't know. What did you think?
I actually drove in one last week for the first time ever. I was really impressed by it. But at the end of it, I think the Flex and the Expedition kind of filled the same void. So I don't know how much sense as a business it is to make those two cars that basically do the same thing.
Yeah, the Explorer and things like that. Yeah. Now, the Fiesta, I'm not going to miss that one at all. That was just too tiny. And it's not going to be, the Taurus, like I said, I am surprised that they don't at least keep it around for police fleets and things like that. Now, Hyundai is going to lose the Santa Fe XL. And that's the long one, which is okay because it's replaced by the Palisade. So that's not a big deal. I don't think the Santa Fe XL was just a stopgap, you know? Isn't that what you feel?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you're going to have anybody crying to Hyundai that they're missing this car, especially with the Palisade, which is getting such great reviews right now.
I think the XL was just a version that they said, let's extend this one for a year or two until the Palisade gets here. And that's what they think. Now, Infiniti,
yeah, I agree,
is losing the QX30 and the Q70, and that's a little crossover. The QX30 was a tiny crossover, and it never really caught on. It was really a Mercedes GLA that was kind of rebadged, and I'm glad they didn't keep it. I didn't like it all that much anyway.
Yeah, you don't really see too many of those on the street, actually.
No, you really don't, and that's probably why they're getting rid of it. The Q70 was the biggest sedan in the lineup, so it really they don't have a giant sedan anymore, but that's okay because everybody is going kind of to CUVs and SUVs, you know, and so they still got the QX80, which is the big boy, and that's a nice thing. Now, the Jaguar, Jaguar, as the people that work there call it, this is the XJ, which is their big sedan. What do you think about that one?
I mean, the XJ has kind of been around forever, and it's kind of sad to see that they're cutting it. I'm interested to see what they will bring in its place, but I'm sure whatever it is going to be something electric.
Well, they say the XJ will continue, but they're going to probably bring it back as an electric vehicle, which is, I don't know. I hate to say
it makes sense.
I know it makes sense. I just don't like it. You know, it's like when they put an E-Type Jaguar it's all electric. I'll just, you know, come on, it'll just ruin my day. You know, it's like the electric Formula E cars. They don't have the sound. If they would just have some kind of recorded sound, I don't know. Automotive is just to me. It's all about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's now Mercedes gonna hit the AMG SL 63, which I had one of these the other day, and it was, I had this one, I don't know, about 6 months, about 4 or 5 months ago, and it was like $210,000, and I absolutely loved it. It was an awesome vehicle.
It's such a beast of a car.
Yeah, it's a beast of a car. This is the AMG version. They're going to still have the Cabriolet and the Roadster, GT Roadster, S63 Cabriolet, wanting the fast one, but still, it was a neat vehicle. Mercedes has enough stuff. Now, Lincoln is getting rid of the MKC. Now, that's really not a loss, is it?
No, I don't think anyone's crying too loud about that either. It was just a small mid-range car, and, you know, that's basically what the Aviator is showing.
Right. Now they've been replaced by the Corsair, and they're getting rid of all these alphanumeric names, and they're coming back with names. We just, you know, which Cadillac would do that? I mean, I hate cars that are the CX this and the SL this and the so-and-so this. They need to have really names. And maybe they just ran out of names. But there's lots of old ones you can use. You know what I mean? But
yeah, I think it's kind of funny, though, because, you know, they'll go with the letter acronyms for a while. Then they might change to numbers. And then a few years later, they'll go back to letters and numbers again.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of jump around. It'd be nice if they kind of just stuck with one thing and kept it.
I remember Cadillac had, you know, the DeVille and the this and the that, and they come back with the CTS and DTS and all these other letters and stuff like that. I just want, names are just so neat. You know what I mean? Maybe I'm just old school. Maybe that's it. Now, Nissan is getting rid of the 370 Roadster, the Rogue Hybrid, and the Versa Note. What do you think about those three?
I'd sad to see the Roadster go. That's definitely a car that has kind of been, my generation has really taken to, and you see a lot of them in the customized scene and in the race car world. So it's nice that they're still keeping the hardtop 370Z, but I'm not too sad about the Rogue or Versa.
Well, the Versa, they just came out with a new sedan. The Note was basically the Versa hatchback. And you see a lot of these in lots of parts of the country, of the world, as taxis and stuff, because they were just a neat vehicle. So it was basically and so now they're going to have just the Versa sedan, and it's okay. But I'm surprised they got rid of the hatchback. I'm surprised they didn't get rid of the sedan and keep the hatchback, but they ended up doing the opposite.
Yeah. Especially nowadays, it seems like every car brand is having a hatchback variant just because of the amount of stuff you can put inside them.
Utility. I mean, everything. Now, here's a car that nobody will miss at all. The smart car. The 4.2. that was just, I had a press car one time. I had a smart car as a press car. And it was funny. It was cute at first. And then after about a day, it got old. And it had no power. It took forever to shift. And it was, the wide open was like 75, almost, you know, not even 80 miles an hour. But even if you went that fast, it would scare you to death because it's so little. It was, somebody called it the saddest way to spend $25,000.
I could see that, and I totally agree with you. My dad would always say, if you get hit in one of those cars, they just bury you in the whole car.
Somebody says says here on Autoblog, it says here, if you find a new smart 2019 Smart 4.2 electric drives for sale on the internet, don't buy it. That's funny. Now, Toyota, speaking of kind of hybrid type cars, Toyota is getting rid of the Toyota Prius C. And it was the cheap bottom of the line Prius. It was very, very small. It was slow. It didn't drive very well. A lot of times you'll see these on Uber and Lyft guys and things like that. But it's small. It was uncomfortable and it was noisy. But it's cheap and got good fuel economy. And I've got, that's all you're looking for, this car was one for you.
Yeah, you see that sometimes, you know, that is, you know, sometimes people's one basic thing. I need a cheap car. I need to get good gas mileage. That's it. Aside from that, I really don't care. And I understand that perspective. A lot of people want their car as just a utilitarian need of a car, and they don't need anything fancy. So it makes sense. But
I know, but you guys, you're in the world, you're in the land of Priuses anyway. So, you know, and then we go back to Volkswagen, get rid of the VW Beetle, the Golf Sportswagen, and the Golf All-Track. They're going. I kind of like the Golf Sportswagen, didn't you?
Yeah, I did too. I always like those.
But I wish they'd just at least keep the Beetle convertible. You know what I mean? A Beetle's a pretty cool car, you know, unless they're going to bring it back as an electric car. I know they're going to bring back the Beetle van as an electric vehicle. Maybe they'll bring back the Beetle as an electric vehicle. What do you think?
Yeah, and I've been seeing that with a couple manufacturers that they're pulling some of these models off the market with the intention of coming back and having that model as a full electrified model, no longer being gas. And I think it's kind of a cool idea because then you take like what Mustang has done. I don't really agree with their Mach-E, but you take what they've done with the Mustang and then try and, bring the brand loyalists that love Mustang back into the world of electric cars.
You know, you're right. It makes you wonder if electric, since you're Mr. Classic Cars, it makes you wonder if you'll ever see a classic electric car. I don't know. All right. We've got some couple of car questions here. One of these I'm going to ask you. And Robert has been looking for a 55 or 56, 57 Chevy Classic. You know, those were all pretty close. They were great vehicles. That was when Chevrolet just went literally crazy. You know what I mean? But he says they're so expensive. He's been looking for one. He said, what about if I got a 58 or even a 59? Because, you know, they were so much bigger, but they were just, they're not near as expensive. But can you get parts for them? And they're going to hold their value. Are they going to be as valuable? You know, they were looked different. Were they really different cars underneath than the 55, 56, 57s?
I think mechanically they're nothing different underneath. You know, you're going to get just as good a car. In my opinion, going with 58 or 59, you do get something that looks a little bit different styling than 55, 56, 57. They kind of, you know, went to a different identity of these cars. But when you look at something like a 59 Impala, you have something with those rear back wings that was basically 59 and 60 only. And so you have something that is a little bit special, a little bit different. So I do see those cars probably appreciating in value. Probably not ever, you know, go above the 56 and 57 years. But when it comes to reliability and finding parts, I don't think that's an issue whatsoever. And I think you're going to get just as good of a car, if not maybe even a little better. It just really depends on what you like visually.
Now, also, don't forget, folks, that Jeremy's going to tell us again, as he does almost every time, the difference between a hard top and a non-hard top when you look at these vehicles. And why would we want a hard top?
So the hard top are not going to have that post that is between the back of the driver's side window and then the passenger window.
The B pillar, right?
The B pillar, exactly. And it gives a nice clean look of the car when you're looking at it. It almost looks like the roof is floating on the car versus, like, you know, sitting on the body.
Say, when they built
definitely,
that, they had to strengthen the top, though, right?
Correct. And you definitely see a little bit of a price difference between a hard top and
Car top and a sedan?
Correct. You'll see a big difference in price between the two of those cars.
All right. Now, this is another question that this is actually kind of, this is a tough, question. I'm not giving an easy question here. A guy named Roger wants to buy a kind of a semi-classic truck, you know, something that'll be, that's his age. He's in evidently your age group. He wants a late 80s, early 90s pickup truck, you know, American car. But he's wondering, if you buy a regular cab or an extra cab, would that make a difference in value?
You know what? I think it would. I don't know if time will really, you know, time will be the judge of that. I don't think we're at a place right now where we can really look at it. Mm-hmm. My one argument would be that you see some of these cars like the Lightning. Dodge made a high-performance car called the RT. Both those cars were made in a regular cab, not an extra cab. And so I see the value creeping towards regular cabs versus the extra cab, just the same as you look at a two-door versus a four-door. I think those extra doors make a difference. And I can see when you're purchasing the car, some people like the longer look of the cab. It adds to the lines of the car, and they might need the extra doors for family, friends, whatever. But I think the two-door regular cab is always going to carry a little bit more desirability over the extra cab.
Yeah, like a short bed regular cab would just be, that's like finding a unicorn. I mean, those things, short bed regular cab, 4x4 is like finding a unicorn.
Yeah, you look at the, you know, 70s cars, and that's definitely the case, is the long beds and the four doors aren't as desirable. So if you look at those trends in past cars and you look at them towards, you know, future cars, I would probably agree that the regular cab is going to be more desirable in the next 20 years, I think.
Okay, now Jeremy, what's been happening on classic.com this week, last couple of weeks? Anything exciting?
So we're still doing our designer series, which if no one's checked out,
it's awesome,
definitely
folks.
Worth a look.
You got to look at it. I mean, I've told all my friends about it, and they're, believe it or not, I have like one or two. I have to pay them, but they're still my friends. And I tell them that, and I tell you what, they absolutely love this designer series. It is so interesting.
So, yeah, it's been really cool. We've been getting a lot of great response. And I think part of it is because we're showing people a side of the automotive industry that you don't typically see, getting to see the artwork that comes from a lot of your favorite cars from the 60s and 70s, which has really been cool. And then the stories that we've been privileged to hear from these automotive designers are just so fun. You know, this past week, we have a story about the GTO, and when Ed Cole first went up to announce the car, one of the press people asked him, what does GTO stand for? And he didn't know, and he went back to John DeLorean, who was the head designer and came up with the name for the Pontiac GTO, Gran Turismo Omologato, which was used with Ferraris, Maseratis, and he was pissed. He was pissed at John DeLorean for not giving him that information before he went up on stage. And this is a story that was told from John DeLorean to some designers at Pontiac at the time and then told to us. And it's kind of these cool stories that we get to hear that we're, you know, sharing along that I think people are really enjoying. So this week we'll have our sixth episode of the Designer Series airing on Friday. So we'd love to have people check it out.
All right. Now that's classiccla.siq.com. Jeremy Berenbaum, thanks for talking this week. We've had an interesting week, and I tell you what, we got a lot of interesting weeks coming up.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's always fun, and I look forward to next week.
All right, folks, this is really fun. This is a real treat. I have Paul Eisenstein, who is the publisher, the head cheese over at one of my favorite sites that I look at every day. It's called the Detroit Bureau. And it's, if you want anything about news on automotive, this is the guy to talk to. And I have caught him. He is at the Consumer Electronics Show, which is now 50% automotive. Paul, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
It's good to be with you. And by the way, if you'll allow me to do a shameless plug,
Folks
do want to check us out, they should check out thedetroitbureau.com. Got to have the word the in there because of the way the internet works. And you will find we're doing a lot of coverage from CES. In fact, I've been working about 18 to 20 hours a day this past week just trying to begin to catch up with everything that's happening here. Because you're right, Mike, it is so much automotive as opposed to the old days, where it was, televisions, drones, and everything else. It's an auto show.
Everything, all those television stuff are in cars now. I mean, it's just amazing how electronic cars are. And so what's the big buzz there now about automotive?
Well, you segued into something very interesting, because shortly after I landed here on Sunday afternoon, I headed straight over to the first day of previews for a company called Byton. You may recall they had originally shown a concept here 2 years ago called the M-Byte, sort of like Megabyte, the M-Byte, which they hope to have on sale in China within a few months and in the U.S. next year. And one of the big things about that vehicle is it's 48-inch, and that's the right number, 48-inch digital video dashboard. It runs from door to door.
Wow.
And it will, of course, have the usual reconfigurable gauge cluster, but it will also have the capability of doing everything from putting up their weather to your emails, and even they just announced that they are doing partnership with seven different companies, including Viacom CBS, which will be providing movies and TV shows and other content, of course, while the vehicle is parked or in fully autonomous mode.
Oh, there you go. Fully autonomous mode. Now, that would be wild. I mean, that's, you know, in Texas, I don't know autonomous will work because nobody goes the speed limit, and autonomous usually goes the speed limit. So it might cause traffic jams.
Well, you know, there are a couple companies that have said that they will program their vehicles, and in fact, Waymo has shown the need for this, to actually have the ability to ride above the speed limit with the speed flow of traffic, because you will create an obstacle if you're only going speed limit.
Oh.
Now, autonomous obviously has been one of the big stories at CES now for probably the last 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
I've been spending a lot of time here talking to various manufacturers, whether they're producing the software, the sensors, or the cars that are going to go autonomously. And one of the things that I'm finding is, well, you may notice there's no autonomous vehicles out there. Even Tesla, which has been very bullish on this, has delayed the launch of their, what they claimed was a fully autonomous version of their Model 3, S, and X. And the reality is we're probably going to be waiting a few more years. How long? Maybe 3, maybe 5, maybe even a decade before we see the roads really populated by true autonomous vehicles capable of going just about anywhere at any time.
Well, you know, for example, I mean, I've been driving around here with, and I've had some cars that'll have, you know, the safety shield 360s and on the Fords and all the different ProPilot this and all the different semi-autonomous vehicles. And you'll have it, all of a sudden, it'll notice a spot where the freeway used to have an exit and maybe it doesn't anymore, where they do a lot of repairs. There's so much building here in Texas, for example, and so they'll take and they'll sandblast off the white lines, and then they'll put in new white lines, you know, for the dividers on the lanes. But it sees the old ones, and it wants to turn, or it wants to do this or that. And so that gets a little confusing. You have to be careful with it, and you have to hold on to the steering because that's not where the exit is anymore. They moved it maybe temporarily for a construction thing or this or that, and it's kind of freaky, and I know we're not ready for that yet.
No. Now, there are some people, some companies that are more advanced than others.
Right.
But the reality is, I don't think autonomous is ready for real world without having a backup driver at the ready at all times. But I think it is coming. It's just a matter of time. And, of course, then we'll have to see how consumer acceptance is.
Right. You know, I know autonomous in a neighborhood or something or in a really suburban area or a downtown kind of thing might not be so bad. When it gets onto the freeways, it's a little bit scary. You know, actually, but then again, some of the way some people drive is a lot scary. So this may be better than nothing.
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I was talking with a gentleman by the name of Gil Pratt, who heads the technology development side for Toyota. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we were discussing was the fact that the public, people, will likely be a lot less tolerant of hearing about a crash involving a self-driving vehicle than they are about the everyday occurrences of fatal crashes involving humans. We will expect once they're on the road that those machines never fail, even though we know that every one of us has been in at least one crash and 40,000 people a year are killed in crashes. By the way, on the subject of Toyota, would you like to hear about one of the most unusual things to come out of the show?
What's that? Is that their city?
Yep. For those who haven't been following all the news, Toyota announced on Monday that they are going to build something they're calling Toyota Woven City. And by the way, that name harkens back to the fact that Toyota began as a loom company. They were in textiles and only later got into automobiles. It will be a ground-up facility, or I should say a city, based near Mount Fuji. And it will be designed as something of the city of tomorrow, but it'll be a living laboratory. So you will see them do a lot of creative things and change things along the way. They'll be experimenting with power, for example, solar roofs and hydrogen power, autonomous vehicles, sustainable mobility, sustainable materials for the housing itself. It's a fascinating project. They hope to have about 2,100 people living there within the next few years, groundbreaking again in 2021. And it could come up, they hope, with technologies and other solutions that older cities around the world will be able to implement. Because as we know, cities around the world are getting bigger by the day and facing more and more problems with things like pollution and traffic.
And problem and traffic and infrastructure and things like that. It needs to be rebuilt. Why not rebuild it with some new stuff? But, you know, the side of that is, you know, it's just that it's one of those things that they can build the greatest machine or this or that. But until they give it to the public and have these people go and do stupid stuff with it, you never know. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, this is unbreak. It's gone through millions and millions of miles of testing and this and that, years and years of testing. And then they give it to the public, and all of a sudden there's somebody out there that screws it up within the first year. You know what I mean? I'm like,
absolutely.
And it's like, absolutely. That's the best test bed you can have is people.
Exactly. And that's the idea, rather than doing something like, well, like M-City, the autonomous vehicle testing center near Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
It's all well and good to simulate what a city looks like, but you never can quite really experiment down to what happens on the ground in a real city.
It's like so by having movie this set, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So this is going to be a living laboratory, as Akio Toyoda, the CEO, said yesterday. Pretty fascinating.
Well, you know, that's one of the other things I've talked to. You talked about that 48-inch screen on some of these new vehicles and stuff. There are a lot of companies that are kind of – everybody's worried about distracted driving. Distracted driving is – and it's big. I ride a motorcycle every day, and I look at distracted drivers, and it scares the hell out of me. And so the point is, we were at a Toyota event – not Toyota, excuse me, Mazda event, a CX-30, and they were talking about how they're going away from touchscreen and gone on to, you know, like switches and buttons and things like that and knobs and stuff on the steering wheel so people don't get distracted, because when you have a touch screen, you've got to sit there and look at your finger, touch the screen. You've got to actually you're distracted for that quick moment. What do you think about all these touch screens?
I happen to agree with
them. You were probably on the same launch, and they were talking about that, and I thought, you know what, you're right. I tried to do something the other day on a touch screen. I realized I had to actually take my eyes off the road and go over there and use the touch screen. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, that's making it worse. That's our distracted problem, you know?
I absolutely agree. I happen to be disappointed to see Audi, for one, moving away from having that control knob. Now, is there a little bit of a learning curve? As you remember Mazda saying, there's a bit of a learning curve, so people may not immediately find it intuitive, but very quickly they do. The reality is it's wonderful to be able to do things like pinch and squeeze and all that other stuff on a cell phone when you're basically standing still.
Right.
It's another thing to have to reach forward and off to the side to try to do things like using, you know, two fingers or what have you to zoom in or zoom out on a map. The reality is your vision is taken off of the road for an unsafely long period of time.
Yeah.
And by that, I only may mean 2 to 3 seconds.
That's 75 miles an hour. Think about that.
60 miles an hour, you're doing 100 feet a second.
Right.
So if your vision is taken away from the road and you're doing 75 and your eyes are off the road for three seconds, you have gone about 400 feet.
Right.
In that period. That's
right.
a long distance to have your eyes off the road.
Yeah. Now, that's the kind of thing where you have semi-autonomous and some protections where the car will brake for you and all that stuff. That's making up for a lot of things right now. I've seen a lot of these newer cars that have the automatic braking and things like that, and the cruise control, the autonomous, you know, the adaptive cruise control and things like that. That has helped a lot of people that are being distracted anyway. And so this helps save somebody's butt because they're not paying attention. And I think that's a great thing. As far as fully autonomous, I'm still a little scared of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of technology coming to the fore. I think we are still in the experimental stage. I'm glad to see that, with the exception of Tesla, most manufacturers have decided that they're going to do things on a fairly cautious level, making sure that things work and work well, and more importantly, that people know how to use those technologies rather than just rush to experiment on the public.
Well, you know, part of the problem is people don't know how to drive their cars. They'll buy a new car, and they use one-fourth or one-fifth of all the features. I remember when Cadillac came out with some of their stuff, they used to give everybody a tablet, and they would have a training class at the dealer going, this is how you work your infotainment system. And I mean, Ford used to do the same thing with their Sync when it first came out. And I think everybody needs to do it with all the new cars, period.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The funny thing is, there's a lot of technology and a lot of features that people are missing on today's vehicles.
Absolutely.
And on the other hand, there are some technologies, as with anything, there are some things you just don't like to use.
Right.
A lot of people don't like lane departure warning because they don't like the buzzes and beeps or the car trying to nudge you back into place. And some people don't bother to read the manual And so they don't know how to shut these things off.
Right.
Or
right.
In some cases, they can adjust the settings. Hyundai, for example, you can take their lane departure system and change how aggressively it works.
That's right.
And people don't. So they complain. They don't learn how to work these systems.
I mean, it's even hard for you or me that we get a different car every week. By the end of the week, I still haven't learned half of the stuff that the vehicle does, and I really work hard at trying to do everything.
Yep,
all right.
Absolutely.
All right, Paul, wait a minute. We run a little shorter time, but I promise you, I cannot let you off the phone until we talk about the Carlos Ghosn thing, because you are so involved in this thing. But the Carlos Ghosn, folks, if you don't remember that, he's the guy from Nissan that got in trouble, head of Nissan, that did such a great job. But he kind of had maybe had a few things going on that may not be up on the up and up, and he got in trouble in Japan, and he's disappeared now. So what? Tell the folks about what's going on.
All right, real fast. Carlos Ghosn, the Brazilian-born CEO of the Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi Alliance, was yanked off his corporate jet when he landed in Tokyo in November of 2018, allegedly for a series of financial corruption charges.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been a matter of debate whether or not he did any of these things. He has called it a coup, and we know the Japanese have been tough sometimes on foreigners running Japanese companies.
Yep.
So it's still unclear what exactly happened. He spent 4 months in a tiny, tiny, unheated cell before he finally won bail. But he has argued that he wouldn't get a fair trial, and they keep delaying it. They've threatened to bring him back into jail. Well, the last anybody knows, around Christmas Day, give or take, he disappeared.
Oops.
Suddenly showing up in Lebanon, which is where his ancestral home came from, or his family came from, and we're still trying to figure out how the heck he got out of Japan. One speculation is that he was snuck out inside a box that musicians brought for a performance at his Japanese home on Christmas Day. The other is, and this is quite interesting, that the Japanese themselves, the government, may have realized it was more of a liability. They didn't want him there, especially with the Olympics coming. It's put a spotlight on the Japanese justice system, and they may, in fact, have essentially helped him escape.
Well, you know, what's funny is it's just he had, $14 million in bail or something that he would forfeit?
Yeah, he walked away from $14 million.
Well, you know what? For him, it may not have been that big of a deal. For you and me, it would probably be a big deal, but it's all about intrigue. You know, it's like watching some kind of, James Bond movie or something. So it's going to be pretty interesting. And I think the Japanese you're right. They may just went, this is a big bag of poop here. I don't want to step in. It was nasty. And so it was nothing but ugly. And now maybe the guy, maybe he was getting a bad rap, maybe he was getting a not a fair deal. And who knows how it's going to turn out.
Yeah, it's a continuing story. I'm sure we will learn more as we go forward. And I would be surprised if somebody doesn't do a TV or movie out of this, TV show of some form.
Yes. You're right. It probably is going to be a TV show. Paul, I mean, as last couple of minutes we got, anything else you want to talk about? Anything exciting? How was your year for 2019?
Well, 2019 was a very, very interesting year from an automotive perspective. And one of the things we should note is that while sales were down from 2018,
right,
the industry had a surprising bubble of sales towards the last month or two, and things were a little bit better than we expected. So everybody's going to be watching what happens in January and beyond to see if the industry is going to somehow avoid the downturn or recession that had been long predicted.
Well,
one of the questions will be, of course, what happens with this whole Iranian mess, and whether or not we wind up with who knows what happening, at the very least driving up oil prices.
Well, you're right. I know that a lot of this issues, there's a lot of stuff happening in automotive. We've got the shift away from cars to more of SUVs and CUVs and trucks. Truck sales are doing great. I mean, now you can get a pickup truck that gets 21, 22 miles a gallon or more.
30 miles a gallon it was some of the diesels.
Yeah, 30, 35. You're right. And, you got Ram passing up Chevrolet. That's going to be a great deal. That's going to be a fight to the finish. Ford is got off their butts and they're building some really nice stuff, and they're starting to put some money back in their vehicles, knowing that people are looking at other brands now. They're not just king of the mountain as much as they were. There's just so many. Chevrolet's actually upgraded the Suburban. Oh my God. You know, I thought that we must be in an alternative universe. They've actually put independent rear suspension on the Suburban. I mean, it's been a great year, and I just can't wait to see what's happening at the end of 2020, you know?
Well, here's one thing I will tell you to watch out for in 2020.
Yep.
Electric vehicles.
Yep.
We are going to see a flood of new models coming this year and 2021. Yep. Of course, we've got that Porsche coming. We've got the Mustang Mach-E coming.
Yep.
We have another Audi coming. We have Volkswagen's first long-range electric vehicle, the
ID.4.
We've got plug-in hybrids here at CES. They're just showing, without talking about, three plug-in hybrids from the Jeep brand.
Well,
so
there you go.
This is going to be a big year to see if electrification, everything from standard hybrid, plug-in, all the way up to pure battery electric,
yep.
Is this going to be the year that it starts to show that it could go mainstream?
Yeah, but then we also got hydrogen waiting in the background that they're going to use on big trucks right now. And once they get some more infrastructure, hydrogen may be where we end up. And I think which is basically hydrogen provides power for the batteries to run electric motors. So I think that's maybe the best thing. What do you think?
Well, I don't know about hydrogen. I can go back and forth on that. Remember that hydrogen is not a fuel. It's an energy carrier. Right. You have to spend a lot of energy to create hydrogen. Then you have to distribute it. Those are big problems.
Yep.
So could hydrogen become a fuel of the future? Possibly. In fact, the Toyota Woven City will use hydrogen fuel cells for a lot of its energy source.
Right.
I don't know. We'll be watching to see, and part of that also depends on whether a couple of the promised battery technology breakthroughs occur. If we see batteries as Nikola Motors, which is also doing hydrogen, but if the batteries they announced just a couple weeks ago prove accurate, they could double the density, how much energy a standard-sized battery can hold, for half the cost.
Well, there
if that happens... The game is battery.
The game
is all about battery.
Paul Eisenstein, DetroitBureau.com, TheDetroitBureau.com. Thanks for joining Let's Talk Wheels today.
My pleasure to be with you.
Hey, guys, this week I was driving the 2020 Jaguar F-Pace SVR. Now, they make this in several different models. This is a midsize CUV, okay? And it's really a crossover. It's really nice. And, you know, if you're looking like the XC90 or the Range Rover Velar or one of those midsize luxury CUVs, this is one of the ones you want to look at. Now, they make this with a four-cylinder, which is, they make a supercharged V6, which is really nice, and that's probably what they're going to sell. But this model was the SVR. Now, R means it's really R fun, because it is a 550 horsepower supercharged 5-liter V8, 501 pound-feet of torque, which means this thing had some grunt. It's got an 8-speed transmission. It's got paddle shifters. This sucker scoots. Let me tell you what. And it's got this great exhaust system. You know how I am about car sounds and things like that. You know, but Maserati was a great one and this kind of stuff, the high-screaming, loud exhaust. This has one of these exhaust systems that when you punch it, and you really hit my major throttle here, throttle opening, it will open up a little plate inside the exhaust and it gets much freer flowing, which means louder. And you can also push it in sport mode. It's got all the different drive modes, you know, comfort and eco and sport. Sport is where Matt Peralt would drive it, and Matt loves this kind of stuff. This sucker absolutely flies. This is one of those 180, 190 mile an hour CUVs that we all know and love. You've got to love this thing. But, you know, it isn't all about horsepower and the wonderful sound the exhaust system makes. As you push it, by the way, you put it in sport mode and it automatically opens up the exhaust. You know, Corvette started that years ago, and it's an awesome thing. Let me tell you what, it really is neat. Now, that 8-speed transmission, the paddle shifters really work. And because the transmission doesn't shift as quickly as I would like. It has so much horsepower and so much torque, though, it really flies. But this is a nice, luxury, mid-sized CUV. It's got two rows. It's got plenty of room in the back. Seats will fold flat, which is really handy. And these things, it's just a nice vehicle. Front seat headroom is really good, but it's kind of got a sleek tail section, kind of comes down a little bit. So if you're one of these 6'1", 6'2" people and you want to try to fit in the back seat, the headroom isn't really what you want. But, you know, I don't know that you would buy this for that. If you're going to do that, then buy the cousin of this thing, one of the big Range Rovers or Land Rovers or things like that. But for 2020, they've changed a little bit. They've added just very minor things. They've added Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. It's got a very nice interior. It's kind of simple, which I think is nice. The seats are similar to the racing type seats that just kind of wrap around you and grab you. And I'm pretty much of a big guy, and so is Matt. And we fit in here pretty well. I mean, it really does fit comfortably. You can adjust these seats infinite ways, and it's got all of the different padding and things like that. You can adjust the seat up for you, and lumbar supports and all this other good stuff. So there's a lot of adjustment to it, which is really nice. You expect that on a luxury car. Easy to locate controls. The one thing is the touchscreen is, although it's right in the center and it's a nice big touchscreen with all the goodies on it, it's easy to reach for either the passenger or the driver, which is thing. But the whole cabin, this is not a big vehicle. Some of the people will complain, well, it's a little bit cramped and they don't have a lot of cubby space and things like that. Not a place to put stuff. And that's true. But, you know, it's not that big of a vehicle. So you've got to kind of take that into account. One thing I did not like about it, and I'm going to put this up right now, I usually use a radar detector, my good old Escort radar detector, that because I'm too busy looking at cars. If the speed limit changes, I have to check on this stuff. It doesn't have a good power plug up front. You have to go into the center console and raise it up and put the power plug your power if you want to charge your phones and stuff. Now, it does have the different charger, but if you want to charge your pads or something like that, you've got to open up the center console and go to the 12-volt power plug. They should put one somewhere else. It's got all the push-button drive modes. It's got all that kind of stuff. It's all-wheel drive. So it really does well. And this got big, big wheels and tires. Now, these big, you know, wheels and tires are kind of handy. Now, like I said, that 10-inch touchscreen was not nice, but the wheels and tires are so big, it does ride a little bit rough because it's got these performance wheels and tires. And that's a big deal. Now, this thing, base price on this one, on the SVR, was $79,000. And with some of the extras I had on it, it ended up to being $90,000. But it comes out like a driver assist, got blind spot assist, 360-degree surround camera, adaptive cruise control, steering assist. And, you know, it doesn't just grab the steering out of your wheel, steering wheel out of your hands when you go to get smooth out of your lanes. Move out of your reins a little bit, it doesn't just jerk it back in the center. It's pretty gradual, it's pretty nice, it's not real annoying, how about that? It's got a high-speed emergency braking, park assist, rear traffic monitor, checks out the vehicles behind you. It's all nice. This vehicle does everything you want it to do. And it's got the fit and finish of a Jaguar, okay? It's nice inside. It's really nice paint. The looks on this thing is everybody is just like, wow, that thing looks good. I had two people say, man, that is a gorgeous car. And it really was. This was kind of a wild looking maroon reddish deal, and it was just stunning. It looks good coming and it looks good going. And got the four big exhaust tips on there and the way the exhaust sounds so good, it is really, really cool. The only thing I didn't like about the interior is the window switches for the driver side, and actually all of them. They're up real high, right there like below the lever to door handle to get out. Normally you see your window switches right there on most cars. These are up real high, like on the top of the door panel. And I don't know why they did that, unless there was just some special reason for crash testing or something. It's stupid, because down there at the lower is where you have the memory for your seats and all that kind of stuff, and that's not what you want. Maybe the door locks and stuff like that, but no, you want the window switches down there where it's easy to get, rather than having to raise your hand up real high and open that. I didn't like that. I don't think I would like this one with the four-cylinder. I think I would like it with the V6, supercharged V6. But I absolutely love it with the supercharged V8. This car does everything you want it. And if you're really interested in that crazy stuff, it says you can get 21 miles per gallon on the highway. And I did. I easily got 21. It says it's 16 in town and 18 about average. And that's about right. So I applaud Jags folks for saying, you know, exactly what it really gets. Because it wasn't one of those things that I know there's no chance I'm ever going to get that kind of fuel economy. But if you're looking for a midsize, super hot, super sexy looking, even with me in it, CUV, then you need to check out the 2020 Jaguar I-Pace. It is a really neat car, and this is why it's their number one selling vehicle in the lineup, and it's that cool.